Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is an audio-only version of a Then and Now video. To see the full video, search Then and Now on YouTube. Enjoy. Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to another of these chats. Today I'm going to look at my last video, The Fist of Modernity, start a short commentary series on it that might last a few episodes. This week I'm going to talk about the historiography that underpinned it briefly. Next week or the week after, maybe going to talk about the repercussions today, how we might think of this today. It is then and now after all. First of all, I will continue the series at some point in the future. I'm not sure when or in what ways. I'm thinking maybe of looking, looking at the education systems of modernity, the science of modernity, the pursuit of profit, colonialism. I'm interested, of course, in the ways in which the processes of modernity really subjectify, mold, and psychologize us, in ways in which the residue of which even remains today and still has an effect on our lives and societies today. So if you have any thoughts on any future direction that modernity series might take, please let me know in the comments. Excuse me, I've got my coffee. So let's get stuck in. Today I'm going to look at the historiography that briefly underpinned it. It was based on a few historians, Clive Elmslie, David Taylor, and Vic Gatrell in particular. I credit those in the description below the video. The books are there if you want to have a look. They're all great books. The Vic Gatrell one, though, is actually a chapter in an edited collection, a very long chapter, about the policeman state. That's very influential and worth looking at. but one of the things they all have in common is that they all adopt this framework that's come to be known as the state monopolization thesis. Influenced by Max Weber's idea of or definition of the state being a community that has a monopoly on violence in any given geographic area. These theorists build upon that to argue that during the 19th century, the state grew, and it grew in a number of ways. So I think 1967, Alan Silver argued that the 19th century became a policed society, and this started this trend in historiography. Historiography, by the way, being the history of history or the study of history, it's a way to differentiate between saying the history of something and just the history of something. But yeah, the thing these historians all had in common is that they argued that there were certain processes going on that led to crime being taken out of the hands of locals during the 19th century and into the hands of a national, usually London-centric or urban-centric elite. Another historian who argued this was Douglas Hay, Francis Snyder. In their book, they say that, and they wrote a book together, in which they say, quote, "The broad purposes of Peel and Chadwick were ultimately realised, and it's incontestable that they advocated a new kind of state power, rationally planned, publicly funded, bureaucratically controlled, centrally directed, and reaching into every neighbourhood which might secrete crime and disorder. Control of prosecution means, in large measure, control of the power embodied in the criminal law. The police came largely to control prosecution. The issue henceforth was to be who controlled the police." After this, Vic Cottrell framed it in the 90s as the policeman state. And the essence of it was that the causation of this trend was the commercialization and the industrialization of society across the 19th century, which took decision-making processes out of the hands of face-to-face communities into a more urban circle of national-looking, resource-based-looking, sometimes globalized elites, i.e. modern capitalism. So, you know, that's the historiography that underpinned the research for the video. Thank you for all your comments on the video. By the way, if you haven't watched it, please go and take a look and come back. This will make much more sense. Today, I'm going to briefly look at the other side of the argument, a critique of that framework for looking at violence and crime in the 19th century. And it's based on an article by Douglas Churchill. I'll leave a link in the description below. And he argues that this framework's become dominant, this state monopolization thesis, but it's very, very simplified, and we need to add some nuance in. He argues that to understand crime, especially the further back we go, we need to understand what historians refer to as the dark figure of crime. That's the crime that goes unrecorded in the statistics. And he says the dark figure is so big that just by looking at the state growth in the 19th century, we don't really understand how crime was dealt with outside of this. He says there were lots of ways crime was dealt with outside of the influence, the circle of the state, in lots of different ways. So he also says, before we look at that a bit more, that the state monopolization thesis presumes that the power of the state is omnipresent, monodirectional, is the only game in town, and that the police, the individual members of the police, are what he refers to as slavish automatons of the state, with no room for manoeuvre, with no room for negotiation with either criminals or locals or other institutions like the church. And he says if we actually look at, say, how a crime may have been dealt with in a community before it gets to the state, we might find that the power of the state is not the only type of power in town. So he suggests a few areas for further research to maybe bring some nuance into the picture. For example, we might look at how
crime was dealt with on a community basis, in villages, in towns, how it might have been dealt with, again, by the church, by groups of families, family friends, by schools, or whether there was some, you know, back and forth with the police before they decided to prosecute. When did prosecution happen? What's going on with this dark figure over here? He argues we should look at the press. The press may have had an influence on crime and on what was worth pursuing as crime by the police, and then what influenced the press. You know, did the public influence the press? And so was the direction of power coming up from below as well as coming down from above, from the state? There are things like honour. The duel, for example, was a classic way of resolving disputes without going to the courts, without going to the state. And there is an interesting study, for example, on knife crime in Greece. And dueling with a knife as a way for the working class to resolve disputes before going to the state. So he argues we should look at that. And there were lots of ways in which honour resolved disputes before the courts got involved. This was something that happened time immemorial throughout historic societies and cultures. So I find the state monopolisation thesis to be convincing still. It is still widely influential. But I agree with Churchill that maybe we should bring some nuance in. I think ultimately, though, the question is, who are the police responsible to? And they are ultimately responsible to the state, to their managers, to the people in charge, not the community. Until much later on, at least, we might problematise that a little bit more today. I also find it convincing because you can see across the 19th century a broadening of this utilitarian logic that centralizes everything into one master pattern, one big logical plan that's directed mainly by elites. This is what Adorno and Horkheimer argue, for example, in the Dialectic of Enlightenment, that it becomes so dominant that it sucks everything into its sphere, and it diminishes and destroys any individual identity, community identity. So rather than the judge of a community having the power to direct justice in the way that he thinks is applicable to that community, you see that judge sucked into the sphere of national judicial law, where there's one rule for everything. So I'll leave it there today. Let me know what you think in the comments. Do you think the state monopolization thesis is convincing? Do you think we need to add a bit more nuance? Do you agree with Churchill? Let me know, and maybe we'll discuss it next time. Have a great weekend. Thank you for watching, and see you next week.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.